Hello and welcome to the Africa Climate Conversation podcast. The platform will convene diverse voices from across the continent to explore how climate change is impacting Africa and create a forum where ideas, insights, and solutions can be expressed and shared. Tonight, we're talking about the role that youth can play in tackling the global climate emergency. Like the continent of Africa, young people in particular have not played a role in creating the climate crisis, but they are heavily impacted by it. Arguably, it will be the defining feature of most of their lives and will become the decision makers that shape how we adapt to and mitigate and hopefully at some point figure out how to reverse its effects. Many young people across Africa are keenly aware of the consequences of climate change already, and they are stepping up and speaking out about it. I'm joined by one such voice in our conversation today, which will focus on the issues related to youth, women, and rural communities and how they are being disproportionately affected by climate change and sharing views on the necessary action required with a particular focus on East Africa, where we are both from. With no further ado, we will turn to our conversation with Ineza. Hi, Ineza. It's fantastic to be in this conversation, this crucially important conversation with you. Before we get too far in, let me introduce myself more formally. My name is James Irongo Mwangi. I won a few hats. Most recently, I served as executive director of the Dalberg Group, a global collection of impact-driven businesses, which I helped co-found longer ago than I like to admit. More recently, however, I've become really focused on the climate challenge and, more importantly, the opportunity that Africa has to become a leader in climate action. And so that's brought me into the climate conversation, trying to understand both the scale of the challenge and the impact it's having on all of us as a continent, but then also planting that seed that says in that is the opportunity for Africa to take a leading role in bringing solutions, not just for the continent and for surviving the emergency, but for the planet and for actually solving it. I would love to hear a bit more about you, kind of your story. I'm originally from Kenya and I'm doing this from Nairobi, but maybe tell me a bit about yourself as we kick off the conversation.
Thank you so much for the invitation to participate in the podcast. My name is Ineza Umuhoza Grace. I am an eco-feminist, impact-driven actor based in Rwanda. I am part of the Rwandan youth NGO called The Green Protector, where I serve as the CEO. And I'm also part of the global coalition of youth on loss and damage, which is called Loss and Damage Youth Coalition, where I serve as the coordinator. I love food and I love music. If you combine those two, that would be the perfect definition of who I am. Thank you.
So the first thing I'd like to ask, and would love to hear your reflections on this, you know, climate change, it's a topic of the moment. As a young person in Africa, how much is this reflected in how Africa's youth are perceiving the current moment? How, to what extent is climate change at the center of their experience and as a driver of their activity or their thinking?
So I grew up in Rwanda. That's where I'm still based. But at the age of 5, I had to be waked up by my mom in the middle of the night to save my life because intensive rainfall associated with wind destroyed my house ceiling, and I had to wake up so not to die. But when I grew up, I attended science school. So I wanted to be a pilot or anything that is going to be near an aircraft. But after 10 years, when I was finished my high school, that's when I was watching the news with my family. And I saw that the same year, there was a particular area in the rural side of my country where rural women and children were forced to move because of the erosion and flooding that was happening. So for me, I thought that what I experienced when I was still a child, it was basically a natural hazard. But seeing that still like something's happening after 10 years made me try to understand much more what's the cause of the changing of this environment around us. So that's when I shifted to go from not going to any engineering school of mechanical or electrical. I shifted to study engineering, environmental engineering, because for me, I was very curious to understand what is the cause of this, the natural effect that's happening to us. And when I attended school, the cause of climate change is not something that we learn so much easily, although it's something that we experience on a daily basis. So this is to mean that in class, there's no proper understanding or not understanding, or like even materials available to understand what is climate change, what is greenhouse gas emission, how is the world ready to resolve. So all this come after you deep down to understand that what your community is experiencing right now is not something that they cause, but it's something that is happening as a result of historical practice or historical business, if I can mention. So I would say that today, African youth, we do understand that we are a vulnerable continent because we are at the front line to experience all the negative impact, but yet we are also the one vulnerable because we are the one who have limited access to the education or technology or even understanding, even also power in decision-making process. But I'm very glad to be part of the generation still again that does not want to only blame, because we are coming together to just deliver our homegrown solution so we can do our innovation in all sectors, because we understand that we are vulnerable, but we also want to be part of
solution. Very often, when we talk about, and I've spent a lot of time in my own work looking at job creation and the big challenge around youth unemployment across Africa. And very often you see leaders both across and outside the continent, across the developing world, and indeed globally, framing climate action in tension with jobs. In your experience, how do young people view those two things, right? The need for economic opportunity and the need for climate action. And, you know, if there's a tension, should we just acknowledge it openly?
So, yeah, that's a really good point. For me, personally, I think that the hope for future job is also into the climate action. Because if we invest ourselves in doing the business as usual, in doing the same exercise that was done in the past, we are not going to have a future because we are going to ruin our planet much more quicker, if I would say. But if we invest in climate action and linking with the job opportunity, that is one way to, first of all, get much more hand in the field to be climate action takers. But also, it can also be a source of sustainable economic development, especially from the frontline vulnerable community, because what the governments need to do, all solution makers, is to come to the community to provide climate action. But once you have a solution and you're going down to meet with the community, just be comfortable enough to unlearn everything that you know about your solution and allow the community to help you understand how your solution can fit their purpose. Because most of the time, a solution, if that's not meeting the purpose of the community, it will not last. And if the solution is meeting the purpose of the community, that's where young people are going to be active stakeholders, because there will be understanding, and there will be also feeling valuable in guarding the solution, but also amplifying to the next level that maybe it was not very clear how it can be reached in the first place.
Ines, I want to pick up on that in the sense of, I think it's exciting to start to identify some of the opportunities that come with being good stewards, for example, of nature, as you've outlined, and the benefits that we get from that in terms of some jobs. I do wonder, are we setting our horizon too low in terms of just looking at protecting what little nature remains, instead of asking a different question, which is recovering from and protecting the planet from climate change is a massive task, a task of a century, a task that will require massive efforts around the world. And how can Africa be a leader in that task? Not just in the low tech, let's not develop this forest way, but also in the high tech and highly engineered spaces and so on. How do we get to have that conversation that says this is our path to real economic development and transformation?
I think you're very right. When we talk about climate action, it's not about trees or ban plastic or like all the yes, it includes, but for what I can see in terms of the potential of Africa is that we have the, I would say, like a golden opportunity, because the Global North developed quite some time back with the use of fossil energy, and then the impact was to ruin our planet that we are commonly sharing, and that's the way the nature put it as to be. But Africa is standing as a continent that is yet to be developed, but we have the access of the knowledge on how can we develop greener, faster, and sustainably. Because when the Global North is going to be reducing their emission, to reduce the greenhouse gas emission in the atmosphere, as a continent, we are able to develop using renewable energy in a sense, so we can still do manufacturing, but in a much more cleaner way and a greener way by offering also a way to protect our planet. So what that also brings me to understand that I really support all the effort that are being into supporting green innovation from Africa. So we in all sectors, especially in transportation, because transportation and also agriculture. So agriculture is like a pillar of Africa. So if agriculture is able to be climate smart agriculture, is going to first of all inform the whole world on how you can achieve food security without using too much of harming or materials or components, but at the same time to also allow Africa to be the next bigger market of food all around the world, because we will be having the ability to produce in a sustainable way. So I like to make a joke in my mind. Africa is going to be sustainable economically developed, where the global north is going to like reduce their development because they did a lot of harm. But we are not greedy in Africa continent, because we want to share. But at the same time, there's a need to have like that understanding that even if you're coming from this different perspective, it does not mean that we cannot achieve achieve a proper future together as a group.
That picture of a system in which, as others try to reverse and undo the systems that they've entrenched, Africa has this golden opportunity to build green from the start, and in a way build momentum into a leadership position, is something that it's really refreshing to hear from the generation that will actually lead that fight, in a sense. Now, another fight that you have led, of course, is the one around loss and damage and the question of how do we pay for loss and damage. I think my own read, and I'll be provocative here, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. My own read is that the moral case for loss and damage compensation is just so clear, right? The continent has a tiny fraction of global historical and current emissions, and we're already feeling such a huge impact. I think what I struggle with is, what will it take to actually get something to happen? How feasible do you think it is to make a loss and damage kind of transaction around compensation happen? And doesn't mean we shouldn't fight for it, but how realistic is it that it'll happen at the scale that we need?
To answer, I will start by saying that I don't like when you say compensation, because compensation is more like something that someone needs to do for you to be calm. But no, it's a right. It's something that is scientifically proven that is there. It's not a compensation. It's more like a responsibility that need to be met. So I'm still new in the loss and damage sector, but what I know, how I like to put out the example is, for imagine if you go to a shop, okay, like a big mall, and then you narrow down, or like you break one mug or like one item. And then the manager will come to tell you, you broke my glass or whatever item you broke. You, as someone who broke it, you know you did it because it was your hands, you are there, you broke it. So you have to take a responsibility and own the moral or like any kind of fee they're going to make you pay, because you know that's something that you did. And what is happening right now is that because when climate change happened, there was like a global denier that climate change is not something real, which made the vulnerable community experiencing much more climate change impact. But now, loss and damage is affecting both the global south and the global north. And according to little that I know, is that the global south are kind of much more ready, have like the research, intrinsically research on how to cope with the changing climate. Because, for example, when a flooding happened in Germany, I think last year, 200 people died. But in Bangladesh, when the same event happened, a lot of people were saved before people would die. So which means global south community have like a way to be dealing with this impact for a longer time. And what we are demanding is the finance. So the finance to address those impact on the ground. So when I talk about the finance for loss and damage, it's not the finance for adaptation, it's not finance for mitigation, it's not humanitarian aid or development fund. We are talking about the finance that's going to be accessible to the community to help them deal with the losses and damages that are caused with climate change. So for this finance to be unlocked, the first and foremost thing that need to happen is for the world to recognize their responsibility, especially in the global north, and take the ownership of how much responsibility. And then we all know that we all share, we all have a played role, but we have to understand that depending on the history, we know who did more and we know who is vulnerable now, but we all have to come together as one. And this finance piece, we want it to be new and additional to already existing commitment and transparent and also accessible. I emphasize on the accessibility because currently the climate finance that is available in the world is not accessible, especially for the African civil society or organization or government, because it's really hard to get the required criteria to be able to submit for a finance within the process. So if this finance for loss and damage needs to happen, it needs to be accessible, because loss and damage is something that can hit you in the morning and then all your country economy can be lost in just like four hours or 3 hours. So if this finance is going to be established, we need it to be quicker, accessible and responsive, you know, in a manner that is able to meet the need of the frontline community when they hit or disaster strike.
So, Ineza, hearing you speak, you know, I'm a Kenyan, as you know, and Wangari Maathai is a major figure in our country's history and in the continent's history, and an example of a strong female leader stepping forward for the climate and the environment. I'd love to hear your reflections as a young woman on that same journey around the role of gender and the ways that Africa's women are both being affected, but more importantly, are not passive victims, but what is their proactive role in tackling the climate crisis?
I think the role of gender is quite something visible, especially based on my country's experience and efforts. So globally or continentally, women are left behind on so many levels, because when you look on all the social economic challenges that are faced by women, it made them be much more vulnerable to climate change. And when the impact happens, they are extremely vulnerable. Because, for example, when we are having an intensive flooding, you can see that women will be the much more prone to die from drowning, or like the one who can also be facing issues like being in the house when the house is going to collapse, because most of the time they're inside the house or they're just going back to grab something else while this is happening. So which prone women to be much more vulnerable. But when you're coming from a country like mine, Rwanda, where the promotion of women inclusion is not tokenistic, because when our country say women should be included in the decision-making process, we actually have key performance index that's going to allow us to know how many women are included and how the engagement is being sustainable and amplified on the next level. I think that is one of the reasons that I am engaged in this sector, because I was able to be supported, not only by being a young person, but also being as a female, so which is something that is quite encouraging. And I feel like now we are also living in an era where African women knows their value and they don't want to be playing the victim card. So they want to come forward with their homegrown solution or small scale solution. But whichever we are trying to do is come up with a solution, because we've been victimized for so long, but now we do understand that we can also take part of being a solution maker and stakeholders and business women. Any field we want to undertake, we can undertake it. And now we don't like to have anything as like a limitation.
Thank you for that. I think in a lot of conversations, there's a lot of negativity. There's a negative conversation about climate change and climate and its impacts and how we are stuck. We're not doing things fast enough. You know, the people who should be taking responsibility haven't. So whether it's loss and damage or anything else, I'd love for us to close out with a message around what is working. What is that area of opportunity and optimism that you're seeing? What does the future hold that is exciting?
So for me, I will say that it's not easy to stay positive in the climate change sector, because there's a lot of empty promises, broken words, and very not clear or transparent mechanism of conducting climate action on the bigger scale. So it's really hard to stay committed. But for me, I have three sisters and two brothers. And I grew up I don't like to be blamed for anything, because I like to be part of doing my best and let the others have a peaceful evening or a peaceful time. So in this climate change sector, what bring me like that optimist energy is to understand that I am doing my best as a person. It might not be enough maybe to move a mountain, but it's enough for me to look myself in the mirror and look to my sisters and my brothers and tell them that I'm trying my best on a daily basis. And that is a kind of something that gives me motivation on my personally. But when I look on how now more than ever, especially Global South and Global North youth are aiming to come together as one to paint what global solidarity should look like, to say no to the injustice. And when you look about the injustice of our planet, or like our generation, it's all linked with climate, because climate is like the core cause of everything. In my perspective, so seeing that now we are living in an era where we have the access on information, the access of technology, and we are all trying to bring that global solidarity, it also brings me hope, which makes the harder day not being so dark and make me try to keep engaging, and also being also able to have a way to stay connected with others so that we can talk about these challenges and then find motivation, but also small wins, because small wins do also do encourage. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Ineza, for sharing your perspective and for your leadership. Wishing you all the best and looking forward to continuing this conversation and this activity in the months and years to come.